Hello, Loveland. I'm Mike Meldon, and this is your Loveland Weekly Podcast. Brought to you by Gina Dubell Smith, EXP Realty, and Stone Pillar Farm. Today, we're going to talk about the eclipse that everybody around here knows about, knows it's happening. Some people excited about it. Some people could care less. But I thought it would be wrong of me almost if I didn't talk about it. It's an event that hasn't happened in a very long time. A total eclipse like this, the last time that it actually was here was in Ohio. Here in Ohio was 1806. I'm going to talk about that a little bit too. We're actually going to take two approaches today. First, I'm going to start out with a story that is particularly interesting to me about the last time Ohio had this eclipse. I'm a history teacher. I've always loved Native American history. I've worked with the actual Eastern Shawnee tribe that and the chief of the Eastern Shawnee that live in Oklahoma right now. So I have a place in my heart for the Shawnee that lived here and their history. And so when I've known this story about Tecumseh and what they call Tecumseh's eclipse for a little bit, and I thought, you know what, this would be a pretty cool place to kind of share that story. And then I brought in Doug. Most of you know Doug. I've had him on a couple times. He's my partner in my nonprofit called Love Our Land. And Doug's a wildlife ecologist, and he's going to come on, and we're going to talk about, you know, how the eclipse could affect your pets or wildlife. And then we just get into talking about different things, especially like, is this eclipse the sign of the end times? But first, I want to start my story about Tecumseh. The exceptional nature of the eclipse lies in its rarity, particularly in the context of total eclipses occurring in the United States, and specifically in Ohio. The last instance of and I do this during the show too, I keep calling it the wrong word, totality. The last instance of totality in Ohio dates back to 1806 and is famously referred to as Tecumseh's eclipse. And another reason it's so interesting and rare is because typically total eclipses are more commonly observed near the North and South Poles, with only slight crossings over the Earth's equator. So, as the story goes, on June 16th, 1806, the American frontier stretched along what is now the border of Ohio and Indiana. Occupied by the Shawnee Indians, this land posed a challenge to the expanding United States. With Ohio recently being admitted as a state in 1803, westward expansion was inevitable. President Jefferson appointed William Henry Harrison as the governor of the Indian Territory, and he had a driven desire for rapid growth. Harrison, later the 9th U.S. president, was known for his effectiveness in expanding the nation's westward frontiers. Various campaigns ensued during the summers as thousands of recruits and soldiers marched into Indian land, causing death and destruction. In retaliation, Indians harassed settlers and towns. Initially, the Indians formed a loose federation of tribes, supplying warriors for specific campaigns. However, they were unaccustomed to prolonged or attritional warfare, and settlers quickly gained ground. Ohio statehood, as I said, came along in 1803 and was swiftly followed by Indiana's and settlements expanding along the Ohio River. At this time, leadership emerged from the Shawnee people, embodied by two brothers, Tecumseh, a revered war chief known for his intelligence and prowess, led alongside by his younger brother, Tenskwatawa, also known as the Prophet. Tenskwatawa, slightly deformed and one of triplets, had a transformative experience, renouncing his past ways and preaching abstinence after claiming a visitation by the Great Spirit. Together, he and Tecumseh united various tribes under one confederation, unsettling white settlers. In an effort to discredit the brothers, it is said that Harrison issued a challenge, invoking biblical imagery. He dared Tenskwatawa to perform a miracle to prove his divine powers, if he was, so they say, a prophet. Unexpectedly, the prophet prophesied a total solar eclipse as a sign from the Great Spirit, impressing many. Despite the historical discrepancy regarding the exact location of the eclipse viewing, its occurrence added to the mystique surrounding the Shawnee brothers. And the sources of the brothers' foreknowledge of the eclipse remains uncertain. But ever since, that eclipse has been known as Tecumseh's Eclipse. And now we're going to dig into the conversation that Doug and I have about the eclipse, what can expect, some helpful hints, and maybe a little talk about the end times. So enjoy. Today is Monday, April 8th, 2024. All right, Doug. So what are you going to do for the eclipse tomorrow?
Well, I guess I'm going to go outside and stare at it.
There you go.
With
protective lenses. So,
yeah.
This is, kind of cool. I took off work, back in, I guess, right in the beginning of the year. This is one of the things that I knew that people were going to start talking about and get on it. And so my aunt lives up, or she has a lake house at Indian Lake, which is, as of what, 3 days ago, it was like right on the line of complete
totalitarian.
Yeah. And as of what, 3 days ago, did you see that?
No.
They moved it 2,000 feet.
Oh,
it's
no.
Funny. It's not a big deal, but it is funny that like they have this new map that came for 2,000 feet. It's pretty interesting that they can get it that close.
Right. And what changed within that time frame?
That's what I'm wondering. Had to be. I mean, I don't think anything with the Earth's axis. It had to be a calculation error, right?
I would think so.
Yeah. As of right now, you have to work? So you're gonna just
I've got to work. So I'm just gonna see what it looks like from here.
And pop out. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. But but so does your school? Do you guys not have off?
So I took off. And I was going to take the kids out anyways, but my school where I teach, they're letting people go, I think 2 hours early, because they're worried about, traffic issues.
Yeah, I bet.
So, which doesn't really help too many people if they want to go into, to go see it from a better perspective.
Right. Yeah.
But I can understand, I can see why they did it. I love that Loveland, though, where my kids go. I was going to take them out anyways, but that they let them off. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, same.
It's one of these things that – I don't know if you've read the same thing I have – that they say that when you see one, it changes your life. Have you read anything like that?
I mean, yeah, I've read quite a few different accounts, both, sort of modern and historic accounts of people being really just awe-inspired by this, 3-4 minutes of complete darkness. It's something that, at the closest I came to experiencing it was, I think, 2017.
Right. Yeah.
And, it's a pretty wild experience, but I could see how some people would be so moved by it that it could be
life-changing. I've read that if you ever see it from totality.
Yeah.
That once you see it from totality, you make sure that you go again. Yeah. And it's an experience. And when you're outside of it, even it's not the same thing.
It's not the same.
They call, I read somewhere that it's one is visual, like the one that we saw in 2017. It's like, oh, this is visual. The other one is an experience. And that's what I want to talk to you a little bit about is, We know that it gets a little bit darker, obviously darker, and the temperature drops. But from you and being a wildlife ecologist, what have you heard? I mean, one of the things they say is you listen for the birds, listen for to wildlife around you, or even what do you do with your dogs inside? People were even talking about your own animals. Have you heard any of that too?
Well, yeah, with in regards to like animals and pets, I've been hearing sort of the statements on the news, you know, that stressed animal, you know, it could stress out like animals that are already highly anxious. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just to be careful and aware of that. But, you know, in regards to, you know, wildlife and eclipses, there's been a lot of just mixed like reporting mm-hmm. about what goes on. For example, there's this one type of bird. It's actually it's present like in Europe and North America, the black-crowned night heron. And there was a scientific journal article that came out that said, you know, when these birds experienced this, they started squawking like crazy. And as the name, you know, as the name implies, they're nocturnal birds. So these birds were becoming really active, you know, in the middle of the day, but it got dark. So there was enough of a environmental cue for them to start saying, okay, it's time to try to attract mates or, you know, fend off other males that are, you know, going to be moving around this time of day. And then a report from another part of the world, same species, found that there was no increase in vocal activity whatsoever. So it's, you know, that there's so few of these events that happen, and they don't, you know, replicate themselves through time, you know, in these intervals in which we can study them. Mm-hmm. We can't really use the scientific method that well to determine any sort of real, you know, findings about what's going on.
And you're the perfect example of that. You're a wildlife ecologist. And when we first start talking about it, you're like, you know, I haven't done a lot of study. Nobody's dedicated.
Yeah.
You can't dedicate a career and a focus on this.
Right.
Because why?
Right? Exactly. It's like you may get to see one or two in your lifetime. And it's just really difficult because, you know, as wildlife ecologists, you tend to have to isolate which species or which group of mm-hmm. species you're working with. And if these species are only experiencing this maybe once in 10 generations of whatever, you know, species it may be, and that's probably being, you know, pretty liberal with it, there's just no way for them to adapt any sort of mechanisms to deal with this mm-hmm. type of thing. So to me, it seems like it's ripe for like all sorts of like wild things to happen that mm-hmm. you may never then see again happen. Mm-hmm. It's just these once in a lifetime sort of phenomenons that occur, and you really just, you can't do anything to prove or disprove anything with it.
I think there's some things we could disprove, and I want to get into that a little bit, because we scientifically, you know, my wife actually came to me the other day and said she was talking to someone, and they said, you know, that this eclipse is going to bring earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
And you
was
know,
this after before or after the New
it was
York
before the New York, which really was like, wait a minute.
Oh boy.
I mean, that really did it. Yeah. Like, wait a minute. Was this guy right? You know, that she heard this from. But when I first heard it, I was like, no, I mean, and again, I'm still kind of like, no, I think that coincidences do happen. And I really do believe this is probably a coincidence, but I had to say, you know, put it into perspective. This is just a perspective thing. Really? That's all it is a perspective thing. It's our moon is blocking our perspective of the sun for less than 10 minutes.
Right.
And it can affect things. I mean, it can affect things that are not used to that happening. Like you said, nocturnal animals or day animals are going to be like, what the heck is going on? I'm going to tweet more. I'm going to be a little anxious, right?
Right.
The temperature could drop. You could feel that.
Right.
But you're not causing scientifically something that could create earthquakes. And there's other theories going around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you would need a lot of evidence to suggest that that is the case. And, you know, I'm not a geologist, seismologist. I don't study earthquakes or anything, but just from a scientist perspective, I would need to see a good bit of evidence to back up that type of claim. And to me, I mean, at face value, that's just, it seems a bit absurd. And, but then again, if you give me the evidence and it says it's true, then sure.
I'd love to see. And hey, if anybody's listening and you got something good out there, please share it with us because I would like to know. And when those New York, New Jersey ones happened literally 2 days after she told me this, I was like, wait a minute. But it just scientific reasoning, right?
Right.
You know, what is actually occurring? How can what that is occurring, how does that change thing with plate tectonics? And I don't think that exists. But there's also I also wanted to talk about this. You know, you go back like to meanings, part of me was thinking about, you know, before we could predict them. Actually, I think we've been able to predict them a lot longer than we think we have. I think humans are pretty good about this. They knew a lot about the heavens and the stars.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But had a very much of a end of the world type meaning to some people, or a very spiritual meaning to some people. And part of me, when I was going to preparing to talk to you, thought, you know, now we know it's all science. But no, as I jumped this too, it's just as much there today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, science is a great tool, but it does not mean it's going to overtake, you know, a person's worldviews or their ideologies or, you know, necessarily. So, there's a lot of things we can't explain, and people want to attribute those things to whatever. And so, I think that's just human nature.
It's not going to go away. No matter how much we know it's just a perspective thing. We know this. The idea that, you know, I'm seeing that this is the end of days, you know.
Yeah.
The funny thing, too, when you say it's just a perspective, especially when 95% of the Earth, because I'm just doing vague math, isn't going to be affected by this at all. Won't see a thing. It won't make any difference. You know, and these happen more often where we don't know about in other parts of the world.
Yes.
And that's not the end of days, and that's not the end coming.
Yep.
But it's interesting just when it's now here in the United States, it's like...
Well, I mean, we hear about it with all sorts of natural phenomenon. This Brood 10, the, you know, cicadas that came out a couple years ago, you know, there are historical reports of when this happened, people thought these are the end times. Mm-hmm. Like they, you know, related them to the, you know, plague and insect swarms that occurred, you know, biblical stories.
Yeah.
And
the locusts.
So, yes, and that's what people would call them initially.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, the cicadas were locust, and they're not. They're not very closely related at all. But they did the same type of, they came out in a swarm like pattern. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you know, people see these things that we can't readily understand, and we can't explain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, that means that, I mean, it's ripe for people coming up with stories to fill that void of not knowing.
Well, speaking of that, the biggest group of cicadas is supposed to come right after the eclipse.
Yeah.
So I think I'm really starting to think they're right. Am I wrong though? Isn't this like you brought that up? I'm glad you did.
Yeah, there are two broods. I can't remember which numbers they are, but there are two broods that, geographically speaking, are larger. They cover a larger area, I believe, than the brood 10. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know. And what it is, it's, I think they just so happen to match up, because these cicadas are either on 13-year cycles or 17-year cycles. And for these particular broods, they just so this year happens to be that year that they're matching up. So you're going to get this much larger area dealing with a large number of cicadas and
end times.
Might be the end times. Could be, you know. I feel like the first time that I really started to get into like those stories, like of the end times, and started thinking myself, mm-hmm. like, are we in the end times? I remember this was as a kid growing up in rural Ohio, farm country. I'd be flipping through the radio stations. Now, if any kids are listening, I know you don't know what this
yeah,
is.
Don't do that, right? Yeah.
But I'd flip through the radio stations and I'd hear talk radio, and there would be some, you know, talking head on there that was saying, you know, all of these things, you know, there's war and famine and all of these things going on, and it's all evidence that we're in the mm-hmm. end times.
Yep.
But then if you read about in history at all, we've been in that stage for as Ever. Long as humans have been
so
in existence.
Funny. The person that actually brought up the end times thing to me the other day, we had that same conversation. I said, listen, if you go around the world every year, there's a different group because of what's going on with them that believes it's the end times. And if you just go back and read history and local stories and this and that, any given point at any given time, it's the end. Yep. And the other thing, though, digress. Well, I'm not going to digress. I'm going to go even further out. And I just want to say this because it was part of the conversation. Is I was listening to a great episode of The Daily, which I listen to usually on my way into work, mm-hmm. and they had a new one on climate change. You know, and the guy at the end, he's their climate reporter. Mm-hmm. And he said something, and I actually played it to my classes that day, just 10 seconds of the whole episode. But just pretty much the interviewer asked the climate reporter, said, you know, they were talking about new technologies and this and that. But she said, being a climate reporter, you're in an interesting position. How do you feel about things right now? And he just said, the biggest issue right now is – no, everybody thinks that now that most people understand that this is real, human caused, you know, that's now we're on the right path.
Uh-huh.
And people have started to relax.
Right.
And he says, yeah. No, that we are, there's no sense of urgency. There should be a warning going off because really right now we can't turn it back. But to slow it down, we don't even know if that's even possible now. And that really – so when I go back to end times, I always say this to my class, we're not saving the planet. The planet's going to be fine. There could be end times for humans, not with all this other stuff, but by our own creation.
We could take a lot with us. Mm-hmm. I mean, as – humans are
– Oh, right,
are,
life. Life. I would say life on Earth, not just humans. I'd say life instead of the planet. Yes.
Yeah. But, I can appreciate the statement that you're referring to with the climate reporter, because this is something that, you know, when you get into this line of work, ecology or, you know, biology, whatever, you're inevitably going to – have to dive into climate change and the mm-hmm. impacts of climate change, because it's a global, you know, catastrophe that's occurring. And I've always I remember doing some reading. This is like in 2010, something like that. I remember I was working in the deserts of New Mexico, so I was experiencing this like really, really terrible heat, and we were dealing with wildfires where I was literally at times running away from fires that were caused by lightning. And I remember sitting in my tent and writing this little piece one evening, and it was very simple, but I pictured myself along with the rest of the world in a spaceship. Mm-hmm. And we were in outer space, and the spaceship was our lifeline. This spaceship was what was keeping us alive. And I was thinking, you know, if things were getting as bad on that spaceship as they are on mm-hmm. this planet,
right,
there would be warning signs and right. signals, and there'd be dinging telling us, you have got to do
something. Your air system is
failing. Yes. And that, to honestly, what climatologists do, what ecologists do, you know, people that study these things, they are seeing those signs, mm-hmm. those alarms, that are, those whistles and bells that are going off. We see those signs, but to everybody else, there are these earplugs in, mm-hmm. and they can't see that. And there might be, you know, a blindfold on, so they're not seeing the flashing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you brought that up, that just reminded me of that.
Yeah, we need that. But how do you do that? You know, you don't want to scare people, but it is here. Another thing that I wanted to add, and I'm going to put this link up on the website, is William Shatner, who I was never really a fan of. His politics I didn't like previously. I was never a big fan of Star Trek. But, you know, he got to go up on Elon Musk's spaceship, and go up into space for a minute. And I would urge people to go listen to his – first of all, if you can watch the clip, and I'll put it online, of him right when he gets off the ship. A rocket. I don't even know what the term is, but he is emotional, and he's done great interviews since. It's changed his life. He's an older man, you know, and he is sounding the alarm. He is one of the guys that is getting mad and frustrated. And it's amazing that this 2-minute thing that he got to see on Earth, I don't even know, it was a very short time where he got to see the Earth, changed his whole life up to that point. And his message was this, guys. When I got to the Earth, I saw this beautiful blue layer outside, and it was beautiful. And when I realized that little thin layer is our atmosphere that keeps all life functioning, he's like, I realized how precious and how
vulnerable
could be harmed easily.
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable we are, and we are not doing a thing about it. And he's raising the alarm. I thought that was really an interesting thing that really, perked me up. Like, okay, this guy's whole life and perspective changed because of that. But anyways, I digress. Let's get back. So I think the reason I wanted to have an episode on the eclipse, I wanted to, you know, mention it because – you know, it's happening tomorrow. I didn't want to go by. And I thought it would be cool if to kind of talk about, again, there's not a lot of information we can give. People that even are given stuff on it, like we said, on articles, it's not a ton. But I thought, well, let's get our perspective of what we're kind of planning on seeing before. And then maybe we come back and see if you know, it doesn't have to be Doug or I, but if people want to reach out and talk about it, I would love to put another episode out maybe in a couple weeks or next week. To get people that were in totality, to see if it was life changing, to see if it was, or was it just no big deal? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of why I wanted to call Doug in and talk with him and just kind of see what was out there, what information that we did have. Now, there is one thing I heard, Doug, and I want to give people this information, is that you are not to wear earth tone colors because it will make it just won't add to the effect. Have you heard this?
I have not. No.
They say that you want to wear green, like bright green, not earth.
Is this when you're getting photographed or something? Or no. What is this?
Totality.
Like, what do you... Totality.
Totality.
So...
Reds and greens.
That's what you want to wear.
You want to wear because of, there is a word for it. And I will edit this with the word. There is an actual word for the effect when you wear red and green in the eclipse. And I'm going to take a break. Hold on. Let's see. Effect, man, cool. Of red, green. It's a scientific word. During eclipse. It's called the – okay. So I just – coming back, I had to Google it because I did not know what the effect was called. But it's called the Purkinje effect. That's spelled Purkinje effect. And it says warmer colors like reds and oranges will appear less vibrant. Even though greens and blues will get brighter and more vibrant. The unique effect is known as the – Purkinje or J effect, and this is a phenomenon that changes how we perceive colors in low light. I was told to wear red and green, and now as I'm looking at this, well, now it says, well, the next article says why red and green are the go-to colors for the eclipse. And the other one says wear greens and blues.
Yeah, that's
kind of odd that they're
conflicting.
They're conflicting evidence. So just make sure you're wearing greens, blues. Yeah,
sounds like green
and red
is the way to go. Yeah,
you can't go wrong with green. So wear your green and you'll get the Purkinje or Purkinje effect tomorrow. So thank you, Doug. Anything you want to add?
No, just everybody enjoy.
Enjoy it, and if you got some good stories, reach out.
Hey, Loveland, it's Emily Barblow, your local publisher of Loveland Lifestyle Magazine. Just wanted to remind you guys that we love covering all of the people, happenings, and things going on in our amazing town of Loveland, Ohio. So make sure to grab your latest copy. We always drop a bunch off in downtown Loveland and surrounding areas. Or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Everything from events to mini press releases, articles. I mean, we have so much happening here. We love covering all of the things happening. So make sure if you're not already following us on social media, you are. And stay tuned for more awesome info from Loveland Lifestyle.
Hello, it's Elise Knapschaefer back with another Loveland High School Weekly Update. So, Monday, we do have the solar eclipse, so we do get school off for that, thankfully. We also have a bit of an odd schedule this week because there's end-of-course testing on Wednesday and Thursday for different subjects. So, while some grades have to come in early to take the tests, other grades won't come in until around 10:30. There's also the spring play this week, the 11th through the 13th. It's Puffs, which I think is based off of Harry Potter, but you'll just have to come and see it for yourself. There's also numerous home games this week for almost every sport: softball, baseball, volleyball, boys tennis, boys lacrosse, all have home games this week. So make sure you show up and support your student athletes and your student artists.
Hello, fellow Lovelanders. Like many of you, I care about our community and our environment. And like many of you, I believe in looking out for our future and our children's futures. That's why I'm happy to talk to you about The Wellness Company. They offer over 400 products for everyday use, all formulated from naturally derived ingredients. That means they're safe, effective, and budget-friendly. Whether it's household cleaners, personal care items, or supplements, this company has you covered. And the best part? By choosing these products, we're not just improving our own well-being, but we're also reducing our impact on the environment. So neighbors, let's make a change together. Join me in prioritizing a healthier future for our community. If you have any questions or would like to talk about it, feel free to reach out to Kim at knherbert05@gmail.com.
Together, let's make a difference.
Looking ahead in Loveland. Today, there's going to be a solar eclipse party. The Loveland Branch Library is hosting events for the solar eclipse today, April 8th. There will be a watch party, eclipse button making, art kits to take home, and more. And coming up, the Loveland Museum Center has its Lunch and Learn with, dear to my heart, Love Our Land. Learn how this grassroots organization seeks to reconnect people in nature by empowering Loveland residents with the skills and knowledge needed to improve and foster biodiversity in their own yards. The event will be held at the Museum Center April 10th from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. We have something truly special here in Loveland. Thank you for listening and have a great week. With the support of On Brand Studios, this episode was recorded, produced, and engineered by Mike Meldon. And please note that the opinions expressed in the podcast do not necessarily represent the views of our sponsors or organizations.